You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Welcome, everyone, to Star Wars Beyond the Film. We're here today to talk about the other aspects of 2011 in our year in review. E-books, games, and our thoughts on the general state of Star Wars right now. I am one of your hosts, Mark Herleman, and with me, as always, is Nathan P. Butler. Nathan?
Hello, hello. Hello, everyone. Make sure you are following us if you want some updates or to join in some discussion about the things we're talking about here on the show. Swing by Facebook, look up Star Wars Beyond the Films, no punctuation in there, and you can find us there. Or catch us on Twitter at SW Beyond Films. There's no the, and Star Wars is shortened to SW, so SW Beyond Films on Twitter.
That's right. And moving into our first, we have the e-books, Lost Tribe of the Sith. These are John Jackson Miller's little addition to the world of Star Wars. We have Sentinel, Pantheon, and we also had the overall e-book catalog was released. Nathan, do you have anything you want to jump on these with?
Well, yeah, I would say that I've been enjoying Lost Tribe of the Sith. It's unusual to see a Star Wars story that literally spans generations, and I like what John Jackson Miller has been doing with this story. It is interesting that they have recently announced that they're going to be collecting these, but they're going to collect them with a final story that wraps it all up. It's about 100 pages long from what I'm hearing, but it's only going to be available in the paid version, because up until this point, you could get all the Lost Tribe of the Sith ebooks for free when they put them together as that collected version, that omnibus edition, basically. When they release that, it's going to have that extra story, and you could buy that as a book or buy that as an ebook, but it'll presumably be the $7.99 cover price. So it's interesting to see they've sort of done the not bait and switch. Bait and switch is when they tell us something like the Hoth level on Ultimate Sith Edition of The Force Unleashed is going to be exclusive forever. You'll never be able to buy it as DLC, so you got to buy the Ultimate Sith Edition. Then they put it out as DLC after telling people they wouldn't. In this case, yes, they're saying they don't intend on putting this last story out as a free ebook, but I think we can actually probably, you know, take them at their word on that one. So it's not so much bait and switch as it's giving us all these different, you know, free samples, and if you really want the rest of it, here's a chance to buy it. And after getting that much free ahead of time, I think that it's probably going to wind up being something that a lot of folks are going to pick up and find worthwhile. But Sentinel and Pantheon just kind of continue the same thing as we've seen before, you know, good build-up of that same general story arc. I would say on the whole overall ebook catalog finally being released, that was a really big thing for Star Wars. And what I'm finding is that there's a split. There are some who are totally against ebooks in general, and there are those who are swearing by ebooks. And a lot of those who are saying they're totally against them, I find, are people who've never actually tried them out. I did a thing a while back with the EU review where I went into a lot of detail about the different ebook readers. In fact, if you check out youtube.com/theEUCantina, there's a video supplement that I did showing some of the readers at the time that you can check out. Just a video supplement. You'll see it'll say video supplement whatever on it. It's the only one that's called video supplement instead of visual showcase from the old EU review stuff. But this is a big deal. I am someone who didn't really think ebooks would be for me. And then I tried out, actually my dentist, who's also a sci-fi fan, he's read Greater Good and Echoes, my novels at this point, which are being re-released in 2012 by GrailQuest Books over at GrailQuestBooks.com, folks. Make sure to check it out. I didn't really believe that they were going to look enough like book pages to be something I would get into. I tried out his Kindle, really enjoyed it, wound up buying a Nook, a first edition Nook, eventually wound up buying a Nook Simple Touch, the touch-based reader. I now have an iPad 2, so I do a lot of digital reading of comics. That's one of the things that sold me on getting an iPad was a Comixology app for that. So, oddly enough for me, in any type of books other than Star Wars, which I still collect in physical form because I've got that giant collection, I tend to get my books now in ebook form. I'm just blowing through the Dresden files right now. And as soon as I'm done with one, click, click, press a button, 30 seconds, you've got the next book, you can start reading the thing. And with Star Wars, on the one hand, it did raise the price of some of these paperbacks to a degree, because the newest versions of the paperbacks, when they see print, are always $7.99 right now. And some of these paperbacks, if you had bought them originally, or bought them at their old cover price, or on eBay, you can get them for substantially cheaper than that. But right now, ebooks are the same price as current paperbacks, And if you see the release of a book in hardback for Star Wars, you'll find that the initial price for that as an ebook is significantly less than you would have for a physical copy, and at least a little bit less than what you would generally get for a price on, say, Amazon, if you're buying the physical copy with a discount. So I think there is a financial good to be found here for Star Wars fans, for those who really want to read Star Wars but want to make it more portable and condense the amount of space they have for their collection. I think that will go over very well. But I do think that since there's such a level of collectability to Star Wars books for a lot of EU fans, there's going to be a lot of people who aren't going to make that jump. I'll be honest, the only Star Wars ebooks I have are the stuff that was only in ebook form initially. You know, Fool's Bargain, The Hive, Lost Tribe of the Sith. And I did go ahead and pick up the re-release of Darth Maul's Shadowhunter as an ebook while I'm trying to find an actual physical copy that's the actual edition that I want, because it didn't change the ISBN number, so most of the booksellers online and even the brick-and-mortar stores haven't the foggiest idea how to order the exact version you want that would have that extra Darth Maul story restrained in it. So I have not partaken of the Star Wars ebooks much, but I am a huge advocate of ebooks at this point, and even digital comics. I think that it's a great way to have portable collections that take up almost no space at all and are as cost-effective or more cost-effective than the physical copies.
That is true. I see, and I'm in the same boat. I'm on the fence. For me, I've always said, you know, it's about the paperbacks, my bookshelf. That's where my passion is I like seeing it all big and glorious. But my wife got into reading the romance books, and it got so bad so fast because she could go down to a little store and get like 5 books for a dollar. And my bookshelf started to fill up with romance. And I'm like, whoa, slow down, lady. What are you doing? So she got the Kindle for her birthday and started just going off the hook with it. And then we went on a trip and I ran out of books. And so she started getting me Lost Tribe of the Sith. They were free. And I found I liked it. So much so, I started to get the hardcovers as they came out in the digital versions as they were available. And that was when I discovered that you've got the little app where you can type in whatever you want. And I was like, wow, this is going to come in handy when it comes to reviewing some books. So for me, I've switched to instead of getting the hardcover and paying the full price on the hardcover, I now get it on the Kindle. And then when the paperback comes out, I rush out and I get my paperback copy as well and put it on my bookshelf and have it there. Because my dad reads all my books. So even if I've only read it on Kindle and I have the paperback copy that I've never read the physical paperback copy yet, I have it on my shelf, so the OCD part of me is okay. And then I can let my dad read the physical copy of the book, and I'm like, okay, cool. The book's actually getting read. It's not something I just paid for to sit on a shelf. So I feel like I'm still winning, you know. But I'm right there with you. I'm trying to make the bridge into comics. I'm actually finding it harder for me to do with the comics than I am the other. I don't know. Something about holding on to the comic and turning the pages still appeals to me, even though I see the price difference and I'm like, man, I need to switch. But I think part of that for me is that all the stuff I have has got small screens. Maybe if I had an iPad, iPad 2, something like that, where the screen was bigger, I might be more interested. I'm not sure there.
You know, let me, if I can allay your fears there, I would say that is exactly the way that I felt. When I first thought about digital comics, I remembered reading some comics that had been scanned on my computer. Not a big fan of doing that. I have a small Android phone. I've got a Sanyo Zio, I think is what it's called, a little Android-based phone. And I got the Comixology app, and I read a couple of issues of, I think it was Crisis on Infinite Earths, the old DC series. I'd never read it before. And if it's on a small screen, you can't just look at the entire page. You won't be able to read it. Instead, as you swipe, you're going panel to panel to panel to panel to panel, and there's a lot of swiping going on, and you never really see the whole page in one place. On the other hand, with a Comixology app, which is what DC and a lot of the companies do, except for Dark Horse, of all people, the Star Wars company, I've gotten rid of my Dark Horse comic reader app because the Star Wars comics I still get in physical form. But the Comixology app, if you use it on, say, an iPad, it does take the entire screen. You can zoom it in to the individual panels if you want, or you can do a thing where you essentially use your two fingers and spread them, and it zooms in on exactly what you want to see. So it made buying digital comics a lot better. I have actually been reading the DC New 52 when they relaunched that soft reboot of DC. I read at least the first 2 issues of every single one of those, all 52 series, and now I'm down to probably about, 15 or so that I'm still reading, and that's probably going to narrow even more. But I've been getting them totally digitally. I read the entire Walking Dead series digitally. I read Incorruptible, Irredeemable. I've been reading a lot of stuff digitally, and I find that as more companies are putting out their comics day and date digitally, so there's no delay between when you could get a physical copy and when you can get one of these, even if the price is basically the same, for me it's just more convenient. I know there are those who say, if I'm paying the money, I better have something physical that I can hold on to. But if you're just reading it to get the one experience out, if you're not planning to resell it or something ever, I think it's a good thing. And for me, I think the tipping point on that was with I bought the PSP Go a couple years ago. And it was the first time I was getting video games that I wasn't turning around and reselling or trading in, say, at GameStop or at Blockbuster. And the sheer convenience of it, to some, like me, would outweigh the ability to then resell stuff later. But I know there are some who are going to be put off by that. I would just say, try it out. See if it's something you would like. See if it's something with, say, an iPad or a Nook. If there are features of it that you would like to have that you would use beyond just the reading, and then maybe you could justify the price tag for it. Buy enough hardback books at ebook prices, it's going to pay for itself eventually. It depends on how voracious a reader you are.
That's true. You know, the other thing, though, you got to hats off to the marketing teams, okay? Think about Lost Tribe of the Sith and the comics, or comics, the stories that they've given you so far for free. I am really looking forward to this, in a sense, Tales of the Lost Tribe of the Sith book. I always love the Tales of stories. I think there's a lot of potential there, all the way around in the Star Wars universe, to do some Tales of stories. But to see that this one is going to actually give you the new content with it, I'm excited. I was going to be buying it whether it had that new story or not. Knowing the new story is there is like, I don't know, a 501st member showing up at your birthday party for me. I mean, it's like, woohoo! So I'm excited about that. Now, like you were saying with the ebook catalog, I'm on the fence with that one because I've already got most of it in my bookshelf. It's all nice. I love it. But there is a great thing to be said about the convenience of, now that I have the Samsung Galaxy Mesmerize, just got that this month for Christmas, there is something to be said about having my Kindle on my phone / my netbook or whatever when I'm going somewhere and being able to pull up, you know, 1, 2, or 25 different books. If I want to quote something out of my library and I'm not at my house, having that library on my phone is convenient. The downside, like you said, is the up price. And it would almost be cool if there was a way you could scan your barcode off your physical copy to get like a knocked off price for owning it or something. That would be cool because I would love to have the entire saga that I have sitting right here on my bookshelf as a digital copy in my phone. That would just be epic for me.
Oh, absolutely. And the funny thing is, we already are seeing that in just about every other area except books at this point, because there are even some cases where you pay, you know, maybe an extra 50 cents or an extra dollar or whatever it is when you buy a copy of, I think the best example I can think of recently with this is the new Justice League from the New 52. You buy the, I think it's called a combo pack or something, where you get, you get the Justice League issue. And it comes with, I guess it's a code, that lets you download the digital copy. Or maybe it comes with a digital copy on a disc or something like that. I'm not entirely sure. I just know that it's a combo pack where you pay the one price. And you do the same thing with movies. When I bought Cowboys and Aliens, interesting movie that. When I bought Cowboys and Aliens, what do I have? I've got, in that case, it's a DVD and a Blu-ray in one container. But a lot of those come with either a code to download a digital copy of it, or it comes with a digital copy on a disc where you use a one-time code and you get access to it. But there's already that movement in those other areas, but it seems like books are the one place where you're not seeing a, if you have a physical copy, you can get a discount or get a free digital version of the same thing. For whatever reason, that market, which is one of the first to really heavily go digital, going from print to digital, certainly before comics really went that route, it's not there yet. It's weird.
Well, and, you know, Marvel did the same thing, The Avenging Spider-Man. They have the same promos. Each one is individual to the comic. And I was mentioning this to the comic store people because I got the first one because they had a copy that was open and sitting there on the shelf. So I was able to flip through it. Okay, I like this. The second one, same thing. They're in the bags and they didn't have the open copy there. And I told them, I said, I don't know what's in it. Is it any good? And they're like, well, we haven't opened one yet. And I said, well, you should probably think about leaving one open if they're not going to have them open and they're coming all sealed. And I'm like, why is that? Well, it was the promo codes. Each one's individualized. And so, like, I told her, you know, you have one out where I can flip through it, I may be more inclined to buy it. But I have a hard time just buying a comic based on its cover when it's sealed in the pack.
Well, I will say that is one good thing about, I know the Nook does it, I'm assuming the Kindle does it too. I know the Comixology app does it for some comics, where you can get a preview and see, you know, a few pages to flip through. You won't be able to flip through the entire thing, but you at least have a chance to get a small preview copy of, you know, whatever it is, at least, you know, 10, 20 pages, if it's a comic, two or three, whatever.
Is that like when we're on Twitter and we see Dark Horse put out the preview for Invasion? Yeah, that kind of thing, about 4 pages worth, kind
of
like that?
It seems like. I haven't tried a lot of the previews for the comics because usually I know what I want if I'm going to get on the Comixology app and hunt something down. But from the standpoint I know of, for instance, the book previews, you're looking about the same thing you would see as an excerpt maybe in something. So it's not exactly enough to give away much of the story, but at the same time, it's enough that if you like the way it's reading, you'll have enough of a sense to know whether you think you'd like the full book. It's a decent little preview.
A touch on the artist and that stuff, the writing. Yeah, that's important. I mean, you know, nothing irritates me more, and I think I was talking about this on EUcast with Knight Errant, the comic. When you're looking at the cover of the comic, the art on the cover should always match the art inside. The one that really irritated me the most with this, that I would say the biggest offender, was KOTOR when they did the arc. Oh, what the heck was it? Vector. When they did the Vector arc, the KOTOR cover art was just beautiful. And then you go inside, and it was just so exaggerated that I was irritated. The way they made the girl's chin, like, all lopsided, I was just like, come on, are you kidding me? So it's important to be able to look inside and see that the carpets match the drapes for better. It's one of those things that just drives me nuts. It's got to match. If it doesn't match, I'm like, that's false advertisement.
Wow. See, I think we should leave the discussion at that right there. Ladies and gentlemen, the carpet should match the drapes in terms of publishing. I have no idea what that phrase means. I've never heard it before. I'm an innocent. So, all right, let's move into the video games side of things here. We spent about 15 minutes, 10 minutes talking the e-books and such. That was a big move for this year. What about video games? Video games seem like there were really only two areas this happened in, at least from the way that I could tell. You got the MMO landscape changing significantly for Star Wars, and really the only standalone game was LEGO Star Wars 3, which is a continuation of the LEGO Star Wars series, with the only big unusual thing about that being the 3DS release. I would say, just if I can start off with LEGO Star Wars, I am burnt out, absolutely burnt out on LEGO Star Wars. I played the original game that covered the prequels, played all the way through that, 100% completion. Played the second one, the classic trilogy, or original trilogy, whatever they called it, 100% completion. Then I bought the complete saga, planned on doing that to 100% completion with the new levels and such. I got a little bit into Phantom Menace and gave up. I was absolutely sick of it. So when LEGO Star Wars 3 The Clone Wars came out, even if it was based on new material, I wasn't going to get it for the consoles. But I did decide to go buy a Nintendo 3DS. I was one of those early adopters who now has a whole bunch of free Game Boy Advance games and digital games and stuff like that because I paid the extra 70 or 80 bucks before they dropped the price. And I gotta say, the 3DS is an amazing piece of hardware. The Street Fighter 4 game, the Star Fox game, just excellent use of the 3D effects. Super Mario 3D Land makes great use of the effects. And oddly enough, of all the games that came out for it, one of the first games was LEGO Star Wars 3 The Clone Wars. And, you know, LEGO games and Star Wars games can be iffy, you know, especially Star Wars games. You got some really good ones, and you got ones that are just, like, circling the crap bowl. And I have to say that I've never really thought about playing a LEGO Star Wars game on a handheld, because I knew they always had less content than what we had in the big console version, like the PS3 version, Xbox 360, Wii, whatever. But I gotta say, even though it had less content, which to me was actually a good thing because the OCD side of me did not cause me to have to go through and play through everything of an entire giant new game. It was a little more compact. The 3D effects on this one were really, really well done. I would say that the thing that gave me hope for the Star Fox 64 release in 3D was the fact that the flying levels had such a great 3D effect on LEGO Star Wars 3 The Clone Wars. So as a debut title for the 3DS, not just for that system, but also for Star Wars on the 3DS, I really enjoyed LEGO Star Wars 3. I hope we don't see another LEGO Star Wars game for a very long time. But, you know, it made for a great use of the hardware. And Star Wars is off to a good start in the 3D realm, it seems like, at least as far as games go.
Really quick, on the 3D side, now, is that like a fall into the game like Lucas is talking about with the 3D movies, or is that one of the pop-out old-style 3D?
Sort of both. What it does is, you've got, if you're holding it just right, you got to hold it about a foot and a half away from your eyes, you're looking at it dead on, And there's a slider of how much depth it provides. So it can be a little bit of depth or a lot of depth. And in that case, what you had was there's a lot of depth on the levels where you're running around as a Jedi, and it feels much more like it's looking in, like you're like you can see into it as if it's a shadow box, not just a flat 2D screen. On the other hand, on the flying levels, there were instances where it felt like the ship you were piloting was almost hovering a tiny bit over the screen, like it's coming out at you. The only thing that I didn't like about that was that anytime your ship was near the bottom or the edge of the screen, of course it can't just keep going. It's not really popping out at you. It's just an illusion. Well, if let's say you make part of your ship disappear on the bottom of the screen because you're so low on the screen, it was kind of jarring visually to see that and see part of it disappear, even though logically your brain can't make sense of why did that part just disappear if it's hovering over. But broadly speaking, it made great use of the 3D effects, and I still am amazed by the effects of the 3DS. If you haven't played, if you're a Street Fighter fan and you haven't played Street Fighter 4 3D edition or Super Street Fighter 4 3D edition on the 3DS, you are really missing out.
Nice. Now, I'm actually a fan of the Lego games, only in the aspect of my 8-year-old. He's got both the games. He loves them. We haven't gotten the Clone Wars one yet. We have rented it. You know, he just can play that game for hours. I can't. I'm with you. It gets mind-numbing at times. But I like playing it with him. And I like the fact that it gives him something that is his speed that we can play, and he whoops on me about. I mean, you know, he's gotten good at Battlefront, too. He can school me all day now. But it was a big learning curve there. You know, but this one, he was able to just jump right in. And he likes all the LEGO console games. So I think in that regard, it is definitely aimed at the young, you know, below two digits, the double-digit age groups. This will be something that will be candy for them for a long time to come. It's that kind of Mario Party type feel of just senseless fun. You're not going to die. You're just going to lose coins. And I think that, you know, when you're young, that is a key to a good game. When you're not dying over and over again, you just get so frustrated, you want to throw the controller or the game system itself somewhere into a wall or into the TV screen, you know. So I looking forward to getting this for my kids because of what it is. But I agree with you in the aspect of it could get very dull very fast. It's not like much is really changing. You know, the whole shift in the MMO landscape has got me kind of, bittersweet. Same thing happened with Xbox. I had the Xbox for a long time, no internet. Finally get reliable internet, have it for 1 month, and then they cancel Xbox Live on the original Xbox. So there went my opportunity to play any Battlefront 2 games or get any download content for those games. So I'll never get to play with Kit Fisto or Saj Ventress or any of that cool stuff. And so I found the same thing here because I've got Galaxies. I've got the Jump to Hyperspace. I just got a dinosaur computer, so I never played the thing. No, I'm never going to get a shot to. And I just, you know, in a lot of ways, I find that side of my fandom and my OCD just ticks me off when I buy something and I never really get to enjoy it beyond opening it up and looking at it. You know, so I felt like I missed the boat. And I don't like the aspect of Tor that I feel like I'm missing the boat because I watch these trailers and stuff and I'm like, my gosh, man, this looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. So I don't really have much to say on the difference between Galaxies and Tor because I've never played either one. I've wanted to. I went ahead and paid the money for one. I don't think I'm going to do that for Tor unless I know I've got an actual computer that can play it because it's just ridiculous on my end. Now, the Clone Wars Adventures, that had a direct tie-in to Season 4, I believe, the Clone Wars launch of Mission on Iceberg 3. The Clone Wars Adventures, my son's played that a few times. I played it with him. It's fun for what it is, but I don't, it's not like something like I would, or even see my son do go to daily to play. I don't know. It's got a lot of free stuff. That's kind of fun, but in a lot of ways it's just one of those kind of, if you want to kill some time, it's fun to play every now and again, but that's about as far as it goes for me, you know?
Yeah. I was never a player of Galaxy. I had some friends who were, there are certainly podcasters out there who are affiliated with StarWarsFanWars.com, which is my big Star Wars fan audio site, but never really got into Galaxies myself. If you look at those pictures on the Star Wars Beyond the Films Facebook page and those albums where I have my gaming album, there's albums of all my EU collection in there. There's the one that shows the Galaxies limited edition package. Like, oh, hey, man, so you played Galaxies? Nope, I had a friend who did and didn't want the box anymore and the stuff that was in it and gave it to me because all she cared about was the game, and then she eventually stopped playing. The only thing she kept was a little figurine that came out of that sucker. So I'd seen Galaxy played, I'd seen Galaxies being played, but never got into it, and I heard all the griping with all the different enhancements and stuff that wound up coming that sort of dumbed it down and whatnot. So can't really say a whole lot about Galaxies, but never got into it. The Old Republic launching, that is a huge, huge deal. I mean, it's opening the door for an entire new era. It has already spawned multiple comic stories, multiple novels. You've got the storylines going in the game that are actually wrapping up some points from the KOTOR games, just like the Revan novel did. It really is a fertile landscape. I kind of wish that I was playing, but at the same time, I don't. I cannot become... I devote a lot of time. People would say, how can you not devote time to an MMO when you're watching all 456 episodes of Law and Order? You know, stuff like that. But I just couldn't sit at a computer and play a game for the hours it would take to build up a character for the Old Republic that would make me feel like I wasn't behind all the time. You know, I can't turn into the South Park version of the people playing World of Warcraft, and you know, I just can't do it, you know, for whatever reason. I don't have the time to invest in that sort of thing, and I have no inclination to do so. Not to mention the fact that if it plays like Knights of the Old Republic, the combat in that was not my cup of tea in some cases either. But
that's me in a nutshell right there. I've gone back to KOTOR 1 and 2 on occasion to play them again, and I'm just like, I've done this. I don't want to put on all this time. I want to go from planet to planet to planet and be done. I don't want to sit there and have to walk from here all the way over here, get the one item, come all the way back, get that guy. Oh, but I talked to five people, and I got these mini-adventures going on. I got to remember that. Let's go all the way over here, get that guy, come all the way back. No, that one time was enough. I just, no.
Yes, so I mean, it's a great tool to open up new adventures and that sort of thing. I don't see myself playing it at any point, and I hope that there's some way for us to find the information that's important out of it without necessarily having to play through the entire thing, which I guess is where guidebooks and stuff like that comes in.
Yeah, heck,
I own the Old Republic Explorer's Guide. It's a 350-page full-color guide to the planets and whatnot in the Old Republic, and I'm not even playing the stinking game. That's just the EU guy in me picking that up.
And I'm kicking myself for that. I went with the Jedi Training Manual. I didn't get that one. And I come back when I had the money on the next day, it was gone. And then I find out, we're not selling that anymore.
Wait, the Jedi Academy Training Manual, as in the one for the RPG?
Oh, yes.
The one with more continuity errors in it than even Coruscant Knights?
I busted bad. That was the worst decision I have ever made. I'm still ruining that one. Why? Why, George Lucas? Why did I choose that one?
Bad purchases lead to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to the end of the Wizards of the Coast RPG. But I guess the new one's coming from Fantasy Flight soon. And we also, of course, had Clone Wars Adventures. I was actually a beta tester for Clone Wars Adventures. Wasn't real big on it then, not real big on it now. It's definitely more geared toward kids. The little mini-games are kind of neat and whatnot. But I almost found like it's the same thing you were saying about going back and forth between the different planets. Just walking around the hub of Clone Wars Adventures to get to the places where I could do other stuff just was annoying to me. So it's definitely not something designed for me. But if you like the little games, like the quick little $2 games and such that you could get as apps on iPad or Android devices and stuff like that, in a sense, that's what you've got. Just quick little app-type, little mini-games all over the place. Heck, if you played half of anything that's been on the Wii the last few years, then you know all about mini-games. So it's definitely not for me, but I do think that it's interesting that we now have an MMO for younger audiences, for the hardcore gamer that's bringing more people into Star Wars gaming that may not have been as big into it before, or into the EU that may not have been into it as much before. And, of course, to have those types of things growing, Galaxies did eventually have to end at some point, so that just happened to coincide here. Now, other items of note that we noticed throughout the year this time, we, of course, had home video releases, and we had a new theme park release. We'll start with the theme park release. Star Tours, The Adventures Continue. Now, I have not had a chance to do this myself. I've talked to people who have gone, and I've seen all the different videos from it, because people are taking videos like crazy and putting them on YouTube of the thing. So I know what it looks like, I know how the storyline goes and such, but I haven't experienced it personally. Mark, have you had a chance to actually try out the new Star Tours yet?
No. When we went to Disneyland, it was my first time. It was in 2010, April. That was actually why I didn't get to go to Celebration 5. I apparently spent my ticket money going there and wasn't told until after the fact. I'm not bitter, though, because I got to go to Star Tours. And the interesting thing for me was when I went there and I went through one of the museums, I got to the Star Tour section and none of it matched. I was like, well, that's not what the ride looks like. And it was Episode 1 and all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute here. And this is in 2010. This is before they announced that they were going to be closing Star Tours and stuff. I did not know it at the time, but the Disneyland down in California had already had a bunch of pictures and stuff for the new Star Tours, the Adventures Continue. And I took some pictures of it and stuff because I was like, what is this? I didn't think anything of it. And I bit my tongue because I just assumed that, okay, these must be old, you know, the demos or something. Didn't say anything. And then all of a sudden all these announcements come out. It's like, man, I've known this since April of last year. It blew my mind that they did that. But I like you, I've seen the YouTube videos, all the different endings and stuff like that. It would be fun. When I went and saw Star Tours, I have a friend that works down at Disney, and she actually was running the Star Tours. So on our last trip at Disney, we were able to go. It was me, my son, my brother and sister-in-law that I had just met for the first time ever. My daughter had gotten sick, so my wife and my daughter didn't get to go on. But she put us on our own shuttle. We all had the front row all by ourselves. When we got on there, she personalized it. Jedi Herleman, your trip's about to leave. This, that, and everything. Everything about it, because she knew who I was, she knew my family and everything, she just personalized the entire thing. It was awesome. And you know, that was the old ride. When I see the stuff off the new one, I think I could spend the entire time I'm at Disneyland just riding that ride because it's so much fun. I mean, you watch it and it doesn't give you the feel. I mean, you are bucking and jumping and moving around. And when I watch the new video, I'm just sitting there going in my mind thinking, oh, man, that must feel awesome. You feel like you're pulling G's in these things. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I've done other similar rides. The Star Trek Experience before they did the Borg one over in the Hilton down in Vegas. That was a lot of fun. I really get a kick out of these kind of things. So I think I could spend an entire day on this new thing with as many options as they have.
Yeah, I think that for me would be the tough part because there are so many options. I would want to make sure I see them all, and I would be going back and back and back over and over again to try to see it again. I did have the experience of checking out the original Star Tours when I was much younger. I was actually one of those who, on the way out, was like, can we, please, 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 and bought one of those god-awful Michael Jackson-looking bright silver Star Tours jackets when I was really, really small. No idea what ever happened to the thing. That's where I picked up my first two Star Wars RPG books, the Imperial and Rebel Alliance source books, way back when. I guess the second editions of both of those. But to me, that's always been something that's been ingrained as a big part of Disney. Like, when I think going to Disney World, I think Star Tours. So I would definitely...
Wait, hold on. You went to Disney World, right?
The one in Florida, Disney World.
Okay, see, I went to the one in California. And, I mean, it was cool, but you guys got it going on over there. You guys got a whole, like, Disneyland section, right? I mean, there's nothing but the building over here and the gift shop. That was it. I'm so disappointed on that.
You've got the gift shop, you've got the little areas around it. I should probably scan the pictures and put them up at some point. When I was little, when I went, just kind of a side comment here, when I went to first see Star Tours when I was very young, my dad had brought a camera, and I got a disposable camera. And between the two, we took a bunch of pictures of Star Tours. I wanted to get a picture of every single droid in that place. I mean, I was little. I loved it. Pictures of everything. On the way out, we get back home, we find that somewhere that roll of film is gone.
No!
I lost all of it. And this was always something that bothered me, just like the paperback of Heir to the Empire bothered me when I had the first, you know, hardbacks of all the other hardbacks for a while. And the same girl that I dated in college, who actually supported the geekdom stuff, you know, my girlfriend now is amazing, my future wife, amazing. She's very much into the same stuff. This was not a girl back then that was into the geekdom stuff so much as she would be supportive of it. And yeah. In that case, what she did, she happened to take a trip down to Disney, and she made sure when she went, this is the same person that picked up the hardback of Heir to the Empire for me as a birthday thing that completed that aspect of the collection before I got my signed one. When she went down there, she had heard me lament that, and she went through Star Tours at least 5 times, taking pictures of every single droid, everything I could possibly want to see. So I've got this stack of photographs from way back when I was in college, where she had taken those pictures to replace them from my childhood. It's a nice atmosphere. I would love to try out the new one. It's kind of disorienting seeing it the way it's supposed to be in 3D when it's not in 3D on the YouTube clips, but at least we see them there. I'm sure Lucasfilm hates it, but I think it builds excitement. You know, I've always been one of those who has, it's a fine line when it comes to things like that, because it does build, it's almost like the way that Lucasfilm views fan films and fan fiction. As long as it's keeping the love of the saga alive and getting people to go spend money on it, it's a good business thing to allow it to exist. So And I'm sure that's a discussion for a whole other show at some point. All right, so
if you want to hear it, send us some feedback.
Exactly. Or pop on Facebook. So we have the theme parks. We also have the new video releases. This, again, could almost get a show unto itself. I don't want to belabor the point because we want to get into, you know, the Blu-rays and – or not the Blu-rays, the state of Star Wars and whatnot. But we had Lego Star Wars, The Padawan Menace. We had – which aired on TV and then showed up on DVD and Blu-ray. We had the complete saga finally show up on Blu-ray. You could either get the prequel set or the classic trilogy set, neither of which would contain the bonus disc for either trilogy. Or you could get the complete saga set with 9 discs, which was really awesome. And with the Clone Wars, we not only had the Blu-ray and DVD release of Season 3, but of course it was still airing at the time, so we got the back half, 11 episodes of Season 3 this year, and the first half of Season 4, 12 episodes of Season 4 this year. Just kind of taking these as a whole, you tell me, I think this is probably the best year for Star Wars on home video in a long time.
Yeah, I could say that. I haven't had a chance to see The Padawan Menace. We stopped cable before it came out on Cartoon Network, and unfortunately, so you can't find any Star Wars on Netflix. Come on, guys, fix that. I want to see my Star Wars. But I'm looking forward to getting it. It looks fun. It definitely looks like something my kids will enjoy. The Clone Wars, I want to be excited. I like The Clone Wars. The issue I'm having is I don't have any of the DVDs yet, and so I want to rush out and get them, but at the same time, I'm like, do I want to get it, or do I want to wait and get a Blu-ray version? I don't have a Blu-ray player yet, but I know soon I'm going to get one, and when I do I really want to put the money in and get it on DVD, turn around and get it in Blu-ray again? So I'm kind of like holding off on that. You know, thankfully, the internet is putting it on streaming the next night, and I don't have to wait a whole weekend to catch it on that next Monday and then forget about it and be like, I forgot the Clone Wars, now I'm not going to get to see that episode. Because that's what was happening for me in the second and third season. I was missing a lot of stuff. So, you know, I'm kind of like trying to play a juggle there, and I need to get them on DVD or Blu-ray. I just got to figure out what I want to do there. Now, the complete saga on Blu-ray, that just tells me I obviously need to go Blu-ray and just say, there's your answer. Go that route. I think we got to come back to that one at some time. There's a lot there that we could talk about. I've talked about it on EUcast. I've talked about it on Star Wars Report. Added scenes, things like that. Some are good. Some make you scratch your head. Why on earth would you add a wall to a scene and then turn right around and have the same scene shot from a different angle and the wall's gone? Things like that. A little attention to details that just kind of make you stop and scratch your head. There were a lot of really cool ones. But again, like I said, there's a lot there that we should probably hit on another episode. So if you want to hear more, again, some feedback.
I don't think you understand that those rocks in front of R2 and that Doug in Jabba's palace were always what was intended. He just didn't have the technology to do it. I'm just saying. A special effect without a story is a pretty awesome – I mean a pretty – what boring thing? Is that what it was supposed to be? I would say Lego Star Wars The Padawan Menace cracked me up. It's probably the funniest Star Wars parody I've ever seen or read. As a case, maybe it's really, really well done. Definitely check that out, folks, if you haven't had a chance to check it out. Yoda's humor especially is hilarious in the thing. I would say that the Clone Wars, we had a very strong beginning to this season, relatively speaking. I mean, some of them have been kind of but then we got the Umbera arc, which was awesome. Now we have Slaves of the Republic, which is the arc that is adapting the arc from the comics. It's very strong. They're going into somewhat darker places. End of last season of the Clone Wars, pretty good, minus the Mortis trilogy, where they changed their own rules halfway through, and the last episode didn't fit the rules of the first two episodes of it, and some of the logic falls apart. But broadly speaking, I think we had a really, really good run as far as the Clone Wars go. I will still be miffed for a very long time about, of course, the things that stand out in the bonus features, as William Devereaux of We Talk Clones and I talked about on the EU review a while back, about how in the documentary on the Blu-ray and the DVD about the Night Sisters episodes, not a lick of credit is given to Dave Wolverton for creating any of these concepts. If anything, Katie Lucas only says, well, I was inspired by, like, this book that was about... And I know I'm not mocking her voice. I'm just trying to do a girl voice, and I don't do very many girl voices. I was inspired by this book about this society that was run by women, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay, you may have been inspired by that to a degree in what you were creating here as far as the storyline goes, but you didn't create Night Sisters and Night Brothers and this female-dominated society and the witches of Dathomir and the planet Dathomir and the concept and the name Dathomir for yourself. Neither did the people of the Clone Wars TV show.
Doesn't that seem like, doesn't that seem though like a marketing strategy you get a lot? Like you'd mentioned earlier with the download content, it seems like they'll tell you what you want to hear, and then down the road, the real truth comes out. You know, I recall the Clone Wars, the Gendy series. I remember hearing them touting, oh, George Lucas has got his hands all over this. I remember him being nominated for awards, and there were props on George's back. And you don't hear anything about George having any hand in it now. It's like that never happened. Clone Wars now. He's in this. He's doing this. He wasn't doing that.
Yeah, you get bits and pieces, but it always irks me whenever something is created in the EU and drawn into the TV show and no credit is given where it's due. Something small, yeah. But something that big and to have a whole special feature about it and not mention Wolverton once really irks me, and I think it is a discredit to Wolverton himself for them to have done so. Same thing goes with the Secrets of Mortis documentary that wasn't a documentary. It was a quick little blurb that said, you're expecting a documentary. You'll notice there's not a documentary about the Mortis trilogy. I'm sorry, aren't I watching it right now? We're not going to reveal anything if George doesn't want us to reveal it. Bye! That's the end of the so-called Secrets of Mortis documentary. I think that was kind of a slap in the face. It's funny from a certain point of view. From another point of view, yeah, thanks, jackass. I'm not really with the way that worked. But I think overall, Clone Wars was pretty strong in 2011, certainly stronger than it had been before. The complete saga set, absolutely amazing. We get deleted scenes, though it would have been nice to have deleted scenes from the previous DVD releases included with this one so they were all in one place. We didn't get Empire of Dreams. Some of the other choices for the documentaries that they chose to include versus ones they left out, like From Star Wars to Jedi, The Making of a Saga, you know, hello in TV land. The fact that they didn't include that one was kind of, you know, head-scratching. But broadly speaking, if you can have a Blu-ray set that makes me actually want to watch The Phantom Menace for the first time in years, more than once, you have done a very good job. So I am loving the Blu-ray sets. I think Star Wars in any form, Clone Wars and the films on Blu-ray, is the best Star Wars has ever been. Despite the flaws of these changes, the visual quality, the fidelity, the vibrancy of the sound and the visuals, absolutely amazing. So yeah, I go get a Blu-ray player, Mark. All right, now on that note, as we sort of run things down here. All right, now the last thing that Mark mentioned first off is the state of Star Wars. Now that we've taken a look back at 2011, where does Star Wars stand right now? I mean, are we in a strong year? Are we heading into 2012 from a strong footing? Is it weakened somehow? Where do we stand? Think of it as sort of the State of the Union address, or discussion in this case, for Star Wars as a franchise as a whole. Mark, you want to start us off on this one?
Sure. No, we're not going to lock everybody up into the state of Jefferson and call it the state of Star Wars. No, when I think about the franchise, I think right now it is at probably its golden age would be a good term to use. You got the Clone Wars action that's bringing the younger generations in. You've got that same generation that's getting older, starting to branch out and going, you know, maybe I'm a little too old for kid cartoons. What's this, comics, books? I'm constantly seeing people that are coming to our podcasts and stuff going, what's EU? That's a good sign to me. I mean, you know, if you want to know what it is, you've came to the right place. We will let you know. It is awesome. Star Wars itself has got a lot going on. And you think about the tour game coming out right now. You got the Star Tours, things we've just mentioned in this podcast for last year. I mean, that's not even the look to the future of things. I mean, there is a lot coming still. There's a lot to be excited about. We've talked about it before, Dawn of the Jedi. That's where John Ostrander and Jan Derisma, they're going back to the very first schism between the Jedi. Before there was even a dark Jedi sect that goes and corrupts the Sith and makes themselves the Sith Lords. All this is something I'm really looking forward to. You know, I think in a lot of ways, the book side of things, I don't know, they're kind of like on the fence with some fans. I'm not necessarily saying they're on the fence for me. I'm liking where I'm still at, but there are a lot of fans. And I want to say that this happens with every big series. I remember there was a lot of friends I had when New Jedi Order was coming in that were like, okay, I'm done. Chewie died, I'm done. Or Anakin died, I'm done. Or, you know, they get to a certain point, they're just like, okay, this is it. I can't take any more. And I'm seeing what I would consider a younger generation reaching that point. I'm one that can put on a suspended disbelief, I guess. And so I haven't got to that point. There have been days where I'm like, man, do I really want to keep doing this? And then I keep telling myself, heck yeah, this is a lot of fun. But I watched friends get burnt out, and I watch other people that you know, are acquaintances of mine that are having the same thing. You know, they feel like nine book series after nine book series is too long, and it's gotten stale. And yet, to me, I'm enjoying it. There's other people I know that they want to know what's going on, and then they start reading it, and they're like, what's going on that I've missed? And they got to go back and read more. To me, I think that's part of the fun. You know, when I first started, there was a lot of books out there. Not as many as we have now, but there was still more than I knew where to begin. And I think that that's, you know, like when people say, which movie should I watch first? I think that's a lot of ways the same concept when it comes to your books. It's like, what do you really like about Star Wars determines which end of the EU you're going to jump into. Like I've said multiple times, I like the older Luke books. So those books are the ones I'm enjoying the most. So The Fate of the Jedi, Legacy of the Force, those books were the ones that I would typically jump on over, say, a book like Shadows of Mendor that's set while Luke's still young. Doesn't mean the book's not great. Most of my friends absolutely love Shadows of Mendor. It just, for me, it wasn't really my cup of tea. I love Stover stuff. It was a very deep book. I don't know, that ship has sailed for me when it comes to being excited about Luke at that age. Granted, that one probably had more going on for it for Luke because it was Luke as a general. That was the untold story. I wanted to kind of know what was going on there. But, you know, it kind of gets to the point that it's so big a library that you really got to know what you want to really get the most out of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I would say that the state of Star Wars, the state of our union, the state of Star Wars at this point is, I don't want to say strong. It's somewhat strong. I think the last few years, in a sense, have been rebuilding years, as I've said plenty of times. Some of the stronger comic series have wrapped up, like Legacy, like Knights of the Old Republic. We have, in the process, seen Legacy of the Force end over the last few years, with Fate of the Jedi not being nearly as strong as an overall series, so to speak. But I don't know. The novels this year were quite strong. Very, very good novels. A great selection of the Star Wars books. The comics, very much a mixed bag. In video games, this year, the games barely existed outside of MMOs. You had LEGO Star Wars 3, and that was it. So I would probably make the argument here that we are not as strong as we should be, but I do think it is an upward momentum that we have right now, not a downward momentum. So the comics are heading into interesting places with most of the series. Dark Times, I'm looking at you. Time to go somewhere interesting. But when it comes to the comics, we're building towards something good. We have Dawn of the Jedi coming. Agent of the Empire just appeared. It only has the one issue out so far, at least as of the time we're recording this. The novels, building and building. Fate of the Jedi will finally end with a bang, hopefully, with Troy Denning's last book, Apocalypse. We have, of course, at the beginning of this year, right around the time this episode's being released, or, you know, either right before, right after, so I guess right around, said it right the first time, we have Darth Plagueis coming out, which in and of itself, Mark and I have both read at this point. It's not heavy on action-adventure, but, I mean, I work on the Star Wars Timeline Gold constantly, StarWarsFanWars.com/timeline if you've never checked it out. And I'm in the process, as we're recording this, of slowly putting in the Darth Plagueis novel summary. And aside from the fact that it's broken up into multiple parts because of how many different stories it interacts with, I mean, James Luceno has kind of an encyclopedic knowledge of Star Wars stuff as he's writing, or he certainly has the encyclopedia open as he's writing.
Yeah.
But that book, I usually, when I read a Star Wars novel, I take brief notes of the page and a fact so I can go back to it and put the individual oddball events, like births and deaths and stuff like that, onto the timeline rather than inside the main summary. So say if something happened 4 years ago, 5 years ago, oh, so-and-so joined Javel Charn's group 3 years ago, then I'll put it 3 years ago from that point. Usually it's only about 10 to 15 different references that I have to take on a given book.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, Darth Plagueis had over 60 of those type of things that I had to write down as notes to go back to. So from the standpoint of getting some really good novels, I think we've had some really good ones. The comic books are building up to be good ones. I think next year looks good. I don't think there's anything announced that really has me super excited for novels for 2012. I say next year, it's 2011, the last few days of 2011 as we record this. 2012 looks good, but nothing is really standing out to me in novels as a wow. It's Dawn of the Jedi for the comics, seeing where the others are going. Novels, yeah, you know, once Apocalypse is done, let's see where it goes. Mercy Kill sounds interesting, but it feels like, you know, it's another X-Wing book. There are those projects out there that titled. Gaming-wise, you know, I don't really see... Do we have any Star Wars games that are announced for next year?
Or this year? Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so gaming...
I'm still waiting for my X-Wing New Jedi Order Rogue Squadron one.
I'm just waiting for, you know, The Force Unleashed 3, which I know, of course, at this point seems like it'll never happen. Or for them to bring Elite Squadron and combine the two Elite stories back together and give us Battlefront 3, but I don't see that happening.
That was the one I was itching for. I'm really looking forward to finally getting a PSP and playing some of those.
So I don't know. I think that we're on good standing. I think the Clone Wars cartoon series is getting better and better as it goes along. So we'll see. We're on an upward slope, but we're not as strong. It's, what's the line from Palpatine?
The continuity, the Star Wars publishing line, is not what it once was. It is fired by baseless continuity, errors, and disruption.
That is a good point, though. I mean, in our chat, I was mentioning, you know, perhaps we're on the edge of fandom civil war over continuity. And I think me and you, we could totally blow this into a whole huge episode down the road, because we've been around 10 plus years. You know, we've seen people's reactions over and over again. And continuity has been the heart of a lot of people's anger, I would say. You know, there are some that can live and let live. There are others that, oh my gosh, the world is coming to an end. But I think when you sit back and you watch it, to me, it's life's about circles. You just watch the same thing happen, just with new people, new events. And, you know, it's like I've come to the point now where retcons are my friends, whether or not I necessarily like all the retcons. I know that sooner or later one will come and find a way. If they can find a way to make Ryloth go from not spinning and being tide locked to spinning again and being both at the same time through physics, I think anything's possible.
Yeah, I think that continuity recently has taken somewhat of a downturn. It almost feels like it's up to the author. When it comes to James Luceno, he does tons of stuff that ties things together, especially in Darth Plagueis. On the other hand, if you look at Michael Reeves and some of his works, you know, how hard would it have been when writing Shadow Games to check and figure out what time period Han could really take part in that story? How hard would it have been to make sure that Lando is Baron Administrator of Cloud City when you're going to have a character say that they used to work for him while he was Baron Administrator of Cloud City 2 years before that ever actually happens to him? I would say that if we get to a point with continuity where finally, we get a novel that is not only good, which Shadow Games was, but a novel that has no major continuity gaps and no obvious continuity gaps in it coming from Reeves and Bonhoff, then we have finally got to the point where continuity matters as much as it should again. Instead, it feels like now it's a loosey-goosey kind of thing, and a lot of times, if the author isn't as versed in continuity, it's not going to happen. It makes me wonder, I've had this conversation with others before, I think, it makes me wonder how the continuity stuff works behind the scenes, because I doubt that it's that people just give manuscripts and Leland Chee reads over the entire thing. It seems more like it's with the Clone Wars. They ask him questions. And I think if a writer feels confident in their information, but their information is wrong and no question is ever asked, a lot of stuff is slipping through that shouldn't be slipping through. Like with Coruscant Knights not remembering when the heck the films took place and undermining their own ending. Like the Jedi Academy training manual we recently mentioned that has tons of continuity errors within it that somehow saw print. So, I don't know. We could definitely turn the continuity, how much does it matter conversation to a whole new episode someday. So
it definitely seems like Lucas has set the precedent, you know, that continuity doesn't matter to him, so it shouldn't matter to you. Don't let it get hung up. Let's just go ahead and push forward. The fans will understand. They've been understanding for the last 15 or so years. Things change. It's Star Wars. I mean, that kind of seems like that's the line. And in that regards, you know, there's a side of me that gets irritated. I get irritated with the corporate line, and that's what it seems like to me. It's like, well, corporate wants us to do it like this, and it doesn't matter that it could have, in theory, be ruining a lot of things in Star Wars. It doesn't matter because that's the corporate line, and we must all toe the corporate line, or we won't have a job tomorrow. And so we're all too afraid to actually stand up for what we feel may be right, that we want to have our job, and we want to continue to be in a spot in Star Wars where we matter as individuals, and everybody in fandom wants to know what we have to say, so we're not going to say anything that might rock the boat and get us kicked out of this position, heaven forbid. You know, I mean, it's not necessarily that way, but it definitely comes off that way from times where you're just like, wow, man, if only George even gave a crap about this stuff.
Yeah, I think I'll leave it off by simply going back to, I think it was a quote from Rick McCollum, where at one point he referred to the fact that it's his job to essentially be the brake pedal for George Lucas. That sometimes Lucas is going way off on a tangent and somebody needs to be there to say, you know what, maybe we don't need 20 minutes of a pod race, for instance. Somebody needs to be there to be the brake pedal. And I think that over the years, whether it's talking about that or just Star Wars publishing in general, the brake pedals have gotten weaker and weaker, and now it's up to the skills of the drivers. And we've got some awesome drivers right now. We've got Ostrander. We've got Lucino really upping his game. We've got John Jackson Miller in the mix. We've got some really good Star Wars authors out there. Christy Golden being a good example of a new Star Wars author who's really doing well, especially the last couple of books of hers. But that does mean you have to be very careful to make sure that those weaker drivers get a chance to get, you know, everything sort of under their feet, to get everything under control, so that when you do give them free rein, when you do give them the wheel, they're not going to be bouncing along the walls, to make a bad racing analogy. You can see just from how bad the analogy was, I'm not really an Indy racer or a NASCAR type fan. Although I do live in the South now, so I guess maybe I should be. In any event, that I think gives us a pretty good wrap up for this episode. We are, again, sort of pushing our time. So, any final thoughts from me? No! From Mark? Mark, any final thoughts?
No, aside from we will catch you in our next episode. Appreciate you guys staying around and listening to us rant on about last year's awesome adventures.
And not so awesome adventures, as the case may be in some cases.
That's true. So, everybody, once again, this was Mark Herleman.
And Nathan Butler.
Of the Star Wars Beyond the Films podcast, and we appreciate you coming. Be sure to go to iTunes and let them know what you think of the show. And again, reach us on Facebook and Twitter.
Good night, all. May the Force be with you.
And never quote us the odds.
Ever heard the tragedy of Darth Tenebris the Wrinkly?
As a matter of fact!
Maxi Chlorians, what the f-